Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard, a change and transformation consultant and self-confessed fintech enthusiast. And today, we continue our series looking at the evolution of fintech in 2023.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, founder and CEO of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And today, we continue our series looking at the evolution of fintech into 2023. And what a 2023 it is turning out to be. Lots of different things taking place. And super excited and happy today to welcome Rocio. Rocio is the director at LexisNexis in the financial crime and compliance space. Welcome today and super excited to have you on the show, Rocio.
Thank you so much, Richard. It's obviously an entire pleasure for me to take part and obviously give my views on obviously on this industry and obviously from a technology vendor perspective, what we have seen as a trend, and hopefully that'll be quite appealing for the audience. Thank you.
Yeah, brilliant. Before we dive into sort of the regulatory landscape and, you know, a couple of other topics that we're going to be diving into today, I've been asking all of the guests that have been participating in the series to give me their view as to what excites you about fintech in 2023. So, yeah, let us know what excites you about fintech in 2023.
Yeah, so fintech has been seen kind of like as an engine for growth and continues to evolve at a very fast pace, especially in the last decade where we have seen how the sector has grown unprecedented. And, you know, we have seen a couple of years the industry has experienced unprecedented amount of investments, and we can see it's becoming more and more mature and consolidated industry. We have seen that the COVID-19 pandemic was a big push for the application of digital technology into financial services. And looking into the pandemic, we see how it redefined the consumer's behavior, shaping obviously an increase of more digital interactions, more acceleration of online payments and online banking activity, and then mobile payments and obviously more contactless payments undertaken. We have seen also how the fintech have had to rapidly adjust to constantly changing circumstances. We obviously had discussed about the pandemic outbreak, but we can also look into the war in Ukraine and the energy crisis and obviously the current difficult high inflation climate. So banks continue to face significant technology challenges to implement effective these transformation. And I think in order to meet the needs of customers nowadays in a very fast changing financial ecosystems, I think banks need to reinvent the business strategy. And that's I see a great opportunity for a close partnership between fintechs and banks, as I think they will certainly be able to fill this gap.
Yeah, I like that. And you mentioned a few things. And one is transformation, that word transformation. And it definitely feels like the next evolution of the fintech space is definitely starting to take shape. There's a lot of murmurings in the market right now about the regulators and how they potentially will get involved in different parts, you know, BNPL, in crypto, etc. So, you know, it feels like back in 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the regulators, they gave everyone a wide berth. Their sole focus was that of adoption and growth. And now it feels like the gears are shifting to one of making certain that risks are mitigated, right? And as their roles change, how do you see their role changing in the fintech ecosystem? Is it them becoming, making certain that there's more frameworks, more embedment of regulatory frameworks into the ecosystem? What are the things that you're seeing right now?
Yeah. So what we have seen is obviously from a technology vendor perspective is regulators stepping up their activity to address more efficiently and effectively money laundering and terrorist financing, especially to tackle ineffective policies and procedures in place to address risks. So regulations continue to evolve to protect, obviously, the financial system from these risks. And fintech play a key role in the financial services industry. So they need to ensure, as they bring a lot of, you know, innovation, to have effective procedures and controls in place, especially when identifying customers, when enabling transactions at the same level required by highly regulated entities. We hear about financial institutions, no? So regulators embrace a role here to identify the risks that fintech put to the financial system and the public and assess whether those risks require a new regulatory approach. So obviously, we need to adapt the regulation to what is changing in the industry. And that innovation that is thought to be provided aligns with regulatory standards. That's obviously key. So compliance is key for a business growth and prosperity. So if a fintech is looking to expand into new countries or applying for new licenses, certainly they're going to be required that level of compliance in place. That's what obviously suspected from regulators now. So implementing new technology will require that level of regulatory compliance and oversight. Also, it plays a key role here as well, no, in providing a good user experience. And also, it's very important to acquire new customers and obviously boost business opportunities. Just to say something actually about the crypto world, because we have seen, you know, the crypto ecosystem is definitely facing quite increasingly regulatory scrutiny, obviously with the goal here to prevent illicit activity and ensure, obviously, that financial crime controls, for instance, you know, sanctions compliance are obviously in place. So, yeah, we've seen, obviously, you know, like the regulatory activity stepping up and a lot of, you know, regulatory changes and a lot of, obviously, you know, like adaptation, obviously, you know, and following this.
I think that all makes a lot of sense, especially if you sort of take a look at, I mean, I read a recent survey through RFI Global, which states that, which was highlighting, sorry, not say, highlighting that consumers' trust actually remains relatively low in this sort of new digital-led banks and fintechs compared to those of traditional banks. So the question then has to be posed back to the regulators and the industry as a whole as to how to get that trust level up. Because with trust, it comes what? I mean, my assumption with trust becomes further adoption, right? So you mentioning that, you know, regulators are looking at bringing in maybe more rigor around certain processes. I feel that rigor is required in order to further build trust and security and then adoption. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, innovation, again, is obviously a great opportunity for technology. Red techs obviously are stepping up, you know, with the most updated technology in place, you know, the use of artificial intelligence, machine learning, because obviously it proves that is, you know, like having those, you know, like that technology in place, you know, can effectively tackle the risks of, you know, like financial crime. So I think definitely regulations have to, again, adapt to, you know, like the innovation that is in place. Because looking into the numbers of, you know, money laundering in the world and the little amount that is actually detected, obviously, our response here is we need more efforts, you know, like compliance has to evolve in the way it is. It cannot be a tick, you know, box. So obviously, you know, what we're doing is clearly inefficient. The methods that these criminals use are quite advanced, you know, and they're always a step ahead of us. No, that's what, you know, that's kind of like the way we see this. No, so obviously we have to be at the front of any risk and obviously, you know, like having effective controls in place and having obviously effective systems in place and obviously the right human capital is key.
you know, being at the front of that risk and leading the way rather than following is paramount in building an ecosystem that everyone can get involved in. And you definitely mentioned earlier about crypto and, you know, some of the stuff that's going on in that world. But also I know that, you know, you and I talking pre-show, you were mentioning that there's a new legislation that is being discussed and potentially some fledgling signs of that legislation in the crypto space is going to be coming out, you know, relatively soon. What is the MiCA legislation and what is it for exactly?
Yeah, so the Marketing Crypto Asset Regulation, as it stands out as MiCA, is looking to set up a legal framework for crypto asset issuers and providers. And it goes into defining a specific regime in the way that crypto asset providers should operate, be managed, and establishing, obviously, that regulatory application to all crypto assets that are currently not covered by any existing financial AML regulations. So this new regulation is looking to promote as well fair competition and consumer protection by instilling appropriate levels of market integrity and also very important investor protection. The proposal will also cover mechanisms to address potential risks that can compromise the financial system arising from crypto. So obviously a great piece of legislation that everyone is looking to embrace that is going to obviously have to set up that legal framework that is really needed in this space.
Where will it be applied? Is it sort of an EU-only legislation or is it sort of cross borders? Where's the origins of this and where will it be put into effect?
So the good thing of regulation is that it doesn't have to be transported into national law. So the answer to this is, I will think that EU regulation has to be applied at obviously the same level across all member states. But any institution outside of the EU that transact in the European Union, an institution that will have a branch or operational unit in the European territory or whose customers might be EU citizens, will have to be abiding by, obviously, will have to comply with this regulation. So obviously different to a directive, for instance, you know, at EU level, that obviously requires EU members, so the countries, to transpose that into national law and make all the adjustments necessary to obviously, you know, like transpose that legislation with the regulation is completely different because that is not required, it's directly applicable. Okay. So yeah, I would say that yes, if they want to operate in the European Union, if they have customers, you know, like EU customers, and if they have an EU operational units branches at, you know, in the European territory, I would say yes, they are completely binded to it.
And it makes complete sense, especially when you know, I guess if you're coming from Singapore, the US, or even sorry, right now the UK, that you need to be binded to some sort of regulatory framework in this space. And from your point of view, what are the overarching regulatory objectives of this legislation?
Well, as I said, you know, it's kind of like bringing certainty from a legal point of view. It's having defined a regime in the way they have to operate in. They have to obviously, you know, have to apply that customer diligence in the way they have to ensure compliance, in the way they have to protect customers. And obviously promote that fair competition. The consumer protection as well is key. You know, we have seen different like scandals whereby like users, you know, invested in like Bitcoins, e-wallets, and they got their money completely stolen. They don't know where that money is going. So I think we definitely need that level of clarity, that level of, you know, like protection for the consumers, obviously in at a time where, you know, like this is evolving, where everyone seems to be invested in this industry. So I think having that like legal framework, I think for me is like the key aspect of the regulation and bringing that obviously legal certainty as to what it is required from this crypto issuers and crypto providers.
Yeah, definitely. And if we look into 2023, is this something that's going to be coming out in 2023, or is it a bit longer? I mean, I've read in places that 2024 seems the likely date, but you know, from your perspective and your knowledge, when should we expect this to start being sent out to the market?
I will expect to be 2023. So obviously, I don't know, unless obviously a delayed, you know, like happens. Obviously, there are all the proposals, but this has already, is at a level where it's already been, you know, like passed and it's already there to be, you know, implemented. So the timeline is there. So I will say, yeah, organizations need to be ready to start being compliant with this, you know, regulation by 2023.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
You also mentioned in that synopsis that, or in the previous synopsis, that, you know, money laundering is very much a part of the regulatory sort of outlook, the regulatory framework. And we know there's so many different topics and maybe scandals that we could highlight that says this is obviously one of the key cornerstones of any regulatory legislation. And, you know, it'd be interesting to understand from your point of view as to where you see this world evolving in 2023 and beyond. I know that there are some new sort of legislations coming out as well. So yeah, it would be good to get some insight on that.
Yeah, sorry. Are we talking here about legislations, or are we talking about key topics, or what are the key trends for 2023?
Yeah. So it's the new regulations from an anti-money laundering perspective. So yeah, just sort of getting some insights from you on that.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. So there's been a lot of, you know, like changes and a lot of, you know, like proposals this year from a regulatory point of view. We have seen, for instance, the Financial Action Task Force, FATF, that adopted amendments to Recommendation 24. And why adopt this, you know, like amendments? Well, the focus here is beneficial ownership. It continues to be a significant headache for organizations. So looking into aging countries to ensure there is adequate, accurate and up-to-date beneficial ownership and controls of legal persons and data as well. And also having that multidimensional approach in gathering beneficial ownership data through the use of different mechanisms to ensure that that data is always available to competent authorities and is always updated. So we have talked already about the marketing crypto asset regulations in talking about here about the legal framework for crypto assets, and that is going to support kind of like, you know, innovation, fair competition, and ensuring obviously setting up obviously, you know, like the legal guarantees obviously for the crypto assets, you know, like providers. At EU level, we talk obviously in terms of, you know, regulation, we have seen the current 6th EU AML directive, which has extended the scope of criminal liabilities and entities and the regulatory scope. We have seen that the regulation has gone on to define a specific predicate offences of financial crime. So it's gone on to following the FATF, you know, approach and going to define 22 predicate financial crime offences that obliged entities, you know, need to look at. That the legal persons as well involved with the crime will be liable in addition to individuals. And also it has introduced tough punishments and dual criminality. At EU level as well, we have a very interesting EU AML and CFT, so anti-money laundering, current financing, terrorism package of measures, which basically comes to have a more integrated framework from an anti-money laundering perspective. We have, you know, more harmonized rules and obviously a wider scope of obliged entities with clear requirements around customer due diligence, ultimate beneficial ownership and reporting obligations. And the proposal goes as well on to establishing an independent AML supervisory authority at European level, and also goes on to kind of like establishing the obligation by obliged entities to identify their customers, suppliers, obviously have the electronic identification through relevant trust services. And on the reporting of suspicious transactions, we have seen that all obliged entities, not with a focus obviously on financial institutions, will have to assess, you know, like transactions, identify based obviously on the ongoing monitoring process. Interest as well in terms of the transfer of funds, because obviously this is actually getting a lot of, you know, debate. We have seen the revision of the transfer of funds regulation, which is basically focused on having traceability of transfer of funds, ensuring the transmission of information through the payment, the whole payment chain. So basically now institutions will have to ensure that the information, you know, on the payer and the payee is actually there, and it has to be linked to the transfer of funds. And also the virtual assets providers are now obliged to collect and identify the sending and receiver of that information, which was initially out of the scope of the EU regulations. As I said, something actually is creating a lot of debate is the proposal to promote instant euro payments. So basically the instant payments now will allow people to transfer money within the European Union at any time of any day within 10 seconds. So now, you know, like payments that might actually could take more than one business day or hours now, it will obviously have to be processed, you know, within 10 seconds, obviously reducing that friction. And that obviously is going to require the use of instant payments technology for those instant transactions that are required now. Also, institutions will have to check the IBAN and beneficiary names, which have to be cross-checked before the payment is issued to avoid, you know, delays in payments, faulty payments, etc. And obviously, that requires effective real-time sanction screening procedures. So having those daily AML controls in place that will require it as part of, obviously, that instant payment.
Lots going on, right?
Lots going on, lots to talk. Just something quickly to say, which I think is very important because everyone is talking about this, is ESG, environmental, social and governance. And a lot of, you know, like regulation around this, especially at EU level. So companies need to be ready because obviously the commission's obviously requirements, you know, like for the compliance of this is happening, you know, like soon. So obviously those entities that have to disclose, you know, like information, they have to report, expected to be compliant from 2024. So they will have to report the financial year 2023. So obviously that's going to bring a lot of, you know, like challenges as well, you know, for institutions as well at European Union level, I guess, obviously worldwide, as this is evolving significantly. And we have seen obviously a growing interest and obviously a growing demand to have ESG in place.
So lots to wrap your head around for those folks out there from a regulatory perspective. But what's some advice that you could give to both fintechs and also, you know, the financial services companies out there that are heading into 2023 and thinking, wow, there's another wave of regulation that, you know, I need to start getting my head around. Also, I need to start making certain I implement some of this and build out the capabilities that allow me to obviously continue business and also obviously grow. So what advice would you give the folks out there? How should they tackle this?
Yeah. So with all the evolving regulation and all the new legislation coming into place, I will say that the answer here is technology and also allocating, obviously, specialized human capital resources and have a strong proactive anti-money laundering and security policies and controls in place and having, you know, like a proactive approach more than a reactive approach. I think that is key, being already ready before any event, any risk exposure obviously happens.
You've got to be involved in the conversation, right? Get involved in that conversation as early as you can in order to have a voice at the table, but also start building out that capability. So it's an advantage to your business rather than something that you're just taking on because you've got to do it.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, you know, like looking into the complex sanction climate that, you know, we live currently, if we look into Russia and we look into obviously, you know, like the allied countries, that brings a lot of significant challenges for institutions, but especially in how to interpret those sanctions, because obviously this is not just black and white. It's like in some cases, it's like sanctions don't imply only the prohibition of doing business with XYZ and that's it. This is more focused on a specific sector's activity transactions. So I think this is a really struggle for institutions. So they really need to understand the real meaning of sanctions measures and having, obviously, you know, systems in place that can identify those and stop, you know, transactions, you know, that might be linked to, you know, like those sectors' activity is very important. Having, obviously, identification monitoring, transaction monitoring, behavioral biometrics tools to detect any abnormal suspicious activity here is key. But as well, I think it is important to count, to rely on truly legal and sanctioned experts that can support, obviously, in the interpretation and internal policy adjustment if it's needed, obviously, from a sanctions perspective, obviously can support the key role of technology here as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned Russia and you mentioned sanctions, and you know that, you know, obviously the Ukraine war is always evolving. Some new information is coming out, you know, daily basically. How do you see the sanction landscape changing or shifting in 2023? What are the things that the folks need to, you know, be aware of in this space? Yeah.
Richard, it's very difficult to predict what is going to happen in the future. But what I can definitely highlight is obviously that it's certain that sanctions compliance is more complex and challenging than ever before. And from our side, LexisNexis Resolutions analyzes data from core enforcement and sanction agencies worldwide is, you know, to understand and identify key trends and changes in policy. And what I can tell you is that the sanctions activity in 2022 has been at very unprecedented scale, obviously as a consequence of the invasion of Ukraine. And let me give you some numbers here to give you some really good context. So if we look into, you know, like the period between January and March 2021 to the same period in 2022, we saw a 90% increase in the number of list updates compared, obviously, to the same period of time. So there was a dramatic increase in the number of sanctions personal entities. So we're talking here about 3,854 net additions across, you know, like key sanctions lists from the United Nations, the European Union, OFAC, OFC, UK. So from January to March 2021, we saw, you know, like designations of 614 entities. So if you look into the same period in 2022, we look into 3,854 entities. So we're talking about a 528% increase in net designations compared to obviously to that first quarter last year. So yeah, Russia has played a key, obviously, role here in terms of, obviously, you know, additions, obviously, to the sanctions, you know, programs, and we have seen unprecedented activity. But we have also seen how other regulators are continuously, you know, stepping up their oversight focus to all the financial crime issues. So we see this, that is going to continuously increase. And again, obviously, looking into these numbers, the importance of having processes in place, effective, you know, technology that can adequate, it can obviously, you know, assess any changes, you know, in any sanctions, any global watch list, obviously is key. And I think it will be still key in 2023, especially looking into all the new legislation that is coming into place. So obviously companies, organizations, financial institutions will have to be ready for this, because this is going to be still a significant challenge for compliance units.
Yeah, some really, really great insights there. And as we look into 2023 and we look at the key topics and maybe some opportunities out there for the community, for the industry, other than instant payment technology, what do you think are some of the trends or opportunities that folks should be aware of as we head into the new year?
Yeah. So I already mentioned, Richard, about ESG, environmental, social and governance, but seriously, it's becoming like a key trendy, yeah, obviously, you know, like topic for, yeah, all organizations. And we can see, obviously, the financial sectors and the fintech sector will continue to recognize, obviously, the importance of ESG compliance. And the reason why is because, obviously, investors, you know, like are focusing the decision making, factoring, you know, environmental, social and governance, you know, like factors. So we're going to see pressure, you know, to provide that ESG performance. So again, companies will have to be ready for this. So yeah, you know, looking into having a comprehensive ESG regulatory framework that meeting those reporting and disclosure obligations to the investors and stakeholders, because they're going to be required to do it. So I think that will be definitely, you know, like trending topic one. And then we have seen also an increased focus on supply chain due diligence. So we have seen an increased interest by non-regulated entities to be compliant, obviously, with the export controls, sanctions, regulations, but also with all the type of risks, you know, like the reputational risk, ensuring, you know, like that they are doing business, you know, with the right counterparties, ensuring they're not taking any unnecessary risk, promote business opportunities. Obviously, they don't compromise the brand. I will talk about blockchain. As we talk about crypto, we know there's an intrinsic link between blockchain and crypto, and there is obviously that growing interest in cryptocurrencies all over the place. This will continue to adopt the adoption of blockchain technology, which I predict it will be more widely adopted by businesses. So that will be also boosted by the increased regulation in the crypto space and also the adoption of high levels of security that have to be provided in the way this, of storing data and reducing, obviously, the risk of impersonation and data theft significantly. Digitalization and artificial intelligence, I already mentioned this, but obviously in an era of digitally advanced technology systems, and looking into, obviously, you know, like the alarming scale of money laundering worldwide, I will definitely think that, you know, institutions need to have more advanced tools and processes to detect and stop financial crime. So obviously, artificial intelligence and machine learning are key to reduce operational costs. And obviously, you know, they drive innovation. And obviously, we have seen that they are very well placed to deal more proactively than reactively with the growing and significant incidents of cybercrime. I think obviously this is key, we already mentioned this, no? And finally, cybersecurity. This is a very key topic. And obviously from a technology vendor is really, you know, important to highlight, because obviously financial firms continue to be a key target for criminals. Criminals are becoming widely sophisticated in the technology and methods, you know, they use to commit, you know, like crime. And they take advantage of loopholes in the financial system to disguise, you know, obviously those illicit funds. So in a way, it is really hard to detect and trace. Cybersecurity is essential to protect customers' data. Obviously, we have seen that ransomware as a method of accessing and locking up a victim's data or device, you know, like has bloomed. We've seen actually, you know, like of this obviously is a process where, you know, they might actually access the victim's data. They might lock it and might say, hey, pay, you know, like ransom in order to release, you know, like the data. So this has shown no signs of slowing down as cyber criminals continue to get more sophisticated in, you know, in their attacks. So I think having effective data security and fraud prevention tools in place, as well as a well-defined incident response plan, I think is vital here.
Yeah, some really great insights. All of them actually top of my list anyway. So as we look to wrap up the show, what's the one bit of advice you'd like to give to folks out there as they head into a year of growth, but also a year of maybe some trepidation when you look at the landscape, both from a macroeconomic perspective, but also from a regulatory perspective?
Richard, I will say again, you know, like the three things I highlighted before: technology, human capital resources. Obviously, technology cannot ever replace, you know, human capital, having specialized people. And we have seen how the compliance, you know, expenditure is going to increase more than ever before. So companies, institutions have to be ready for that. These new regulations obviously are coming here to protect, you know, like the financial system. And obviously that requires to have effective controls, policies in place, and technology, obviously, that will help them, that will drive, you know, like the effectiveness and will help obviously those compliance, you know, like teams, you know, with the challenge, you know, they have to ensure compliance. I would say technology, human capital resources, having specialized people, and get support. If you obviously you're struggling, you know, get legal expertise. We have a lot of people out there, you know, companies provide that expertise, you know, from a sanctions perspective, or implementing, you know, like an ML, you know, system, effective policy in place. So obviously, you know, outsource the compliance function if obviously, you know, like the company really, really struggles, obviously, to have that in place. So I think we have a lot of, you know, like help there. No, we have a lot of resources. No, so we just need to make use of them, right? So yeah, that will be, you know, my advice to the community, to the industry.
Brilliant. And you know, folks out there want to get in touch with you or the people at LexisNexis, what's the best route to do that?
Yes. So they can contact me via LinkedIn. If not, obviously, I'm happy to share my email address and I will more than happy to answer any questions, you know, like that they might have. So if anyone wants to learn more about what we do, how we help institutions, you know, in comply with regulations and with the, obviously, you know, like the ML, know your customer resilience, you know, standards, please, you know, don't hesitate to reach out.
Brilliant. And yeah, thanks so much for joining us today. And folks out there, looking forward to you tuning in next week for the continuation of our series where we look at the evolution of fintech into 2023. See you then.
Thank you for listening to the Fintech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.